You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
Hi, everyone. This is a re-release of episode 88 with Erin Willamy. I originally published this back in August and ended up needing to put it on hold for a little bit. So here it is again, if you didn't catch it the one weekend it was live. Erin is a fantastic actor. She was a few years after me at the University of Evansville, and I still remember first seeing her on stage and being blown away by her presence and her ability to transform. She is a thoughtful and funny artist, and I'm excited to put this back out there for you to hear. If you have a moment, please rate and review the podcast in iTunes. It would be so helpful. And if you find the mission of the podcast to be valuable to you as an artist, check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. I hope you enjoy the 88th episode of The Compass. So what do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side?
Oh, the question. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is yoga.
Yeah.
Is that Yoga Agora studio in Astoria really saved me 6 years ago. Is when I started going there.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, that's when it was $5 a class.
Mm-hmm. Now it's only recently changed it.
Yeah. To a whopping $8. So it's like still something that's affordable that gives me a chance to like just have a separate community. I like not just the act of yoga, but like going there and separating myself from acting in a way and like being in that studio.
How it's often neat. Do you usually go?
Like 3 or 4 times a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely became like an investment for me. Like I set aside money to make sure I can go, but it definitely helps calm me. And the studio is so supportive of artists. Like everyone there seems to be like actor, dancer, painter, writer. It's kind of cool.
So you actually talk to people there. I guess I just want to be anonymous when I go to yoga. I never talk to anybody. I should be better about that.
You know, I remember the days when I was anonymous, and, you know, it's easier to fall over and be anonymous. But now everyone knows, you know, I went too many times that I had to start talking to people. And then,
yeah.
But they're so supportive. Every teacher there is like, they're coming to see the show I do. And they're great people. So
that's really nice.
So yoga's helped me a lot.
What does the dark side usually look like for you?
It's usually the long period of time between jobs when I love my day job is babysitting. Mm-hmm. And I love what I do, luckily. Like, I enjoy the act of helping kids and being around kids. But after a while, I'm like, when is it going to happen again? Am I going to get another job? And I start to spiral down into thinking, like, maybe I won't get a
right
job.
Maybe that was it,
yeah, because there's no guarantee, I guess. So it can be scary if you start to think about it too hard. And so it's like, well, hang out with friends or go to yoga or babysit or do something to keep your mind off of it.
Is that always what your go-to day job has been, babysitting?
No, I worked in the box office at Signature Theater.
Oh, that's right.
For 3 years.
That's right.
With a lot of our friends. And then I worked in their development department for like a year, just doing some data entry. And then I was a caterer waiter for a couple years. And then I slowly moved into babysitting. So I've done a lot of those little odd jobs, but
yeah,
I got lucky enough to meet a lot of great families in Astoria, and so I'm babysitting for a lot of
people. Oh, that's even better
if
it's in Astoria and you don't have to travel across the city when you're done.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, I mean, we can talk about all sorts of stuff, but I wanted to ask you what your experience was like
going straight from Evansville to New York and figuring out what to do straight out of undergrad, because I went the grad school route, so I had a different experience. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I, for some reason, I just knew I didn't want to do grad school. I think that it was because I knew I looked really young, and I was feeling like maybe it would help me if I moved to the city.
Yeah, to capitalize on that.
Yeah, and it was hard, though. I mean, what I didn't know is you don't get your equity card then if you don't go to a certain program, or it's things that I didn't think about or have a showcase or anything like that. So I took classes at like one-on-one, uh-huh, and sort of got a showcase through that, and that started my relationships with different people, and then I got an agent that way. But it just took, I mean, by the time people were graduating grad school from my year, I was just getting my equity card too. So it took just as long as if I had gone to grad school.
Yeah.
And it was a different sort of transition, considering I didn't have any sort of showcase. So I was just sort of learning as I went along, and I ended up being picked up by an agent after a year. It was a small agency, but they got me in the room for some things I wouldn't have otherwise been able to get into. And then that led to, you know, finally getting a booking after a few years, and then that led to something else. So slow process.
Yeah. But,
and I think, you know, looking back on it, I do sometimes wonder if I should have tried to go the grad school path, just because it seems like I would love to have studied a little more before. But on the other hand, I play 16. I play, you know, a really young looking characters, so I guess it
no
worked.
And I mean, you were taking classes and spending money on different things, but you probably also avoided a lot of student loans.
Oh, that's
from
true.
Going yeah. You know, yeah, going to another
that's
school.
True. And Evansville, I mean, it's a good school, but it's not cheap, so
no, it's true. It's true. How do you, I mean, you do play a lot of young roles, and it's, I'm sure it's like a blessing and a curse to you. How are you feeling these days about being typecast, or like, how do you approach, now that you're a little older, approach playing some of these young roles?
Yeah, I think that there's some roles that are young that I can't play, that are just, they need someone who's really that age. And then I think there's some roles that like are wise beyond their years, and that's mm-hmm. my like niche, is that I can, you know, hopefully bring like an older sense to these characters that are 18 going on 29,
right,
you know. And I also, I mean, it was hard because I, starting out, I didn't have I was competing, of course, against a lot of people who were child actors who started professionally when they were actually children,
right,
so I didn't have the credits to support me as in getting in the room and stuff. But eventually I got to the point where I think when people knew that I wasn't actually a teenager, that it was a benefit, because they could, well, they didn't have to have my mom on set.
Right.
And they also like got
they could
somebody.
Tell you were responsible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dependable.
So it did work for a while. At some point it became like to my advantage. And like the character now is 18, but she's definitely like a smart, mature 18, I think.
Yeah.
And there's such a range of 18, I think, that you can be.
Oh, my God. There's such a range.
Think about, yeah. I mean, I still remember being 18 pretty well and thinking, like, sometimes I think, I haven't changed that much. And then I think of things I did, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I have learned a lot since then.
Well, congratulations on your current play.
Oh, thanks.
Doll's House Part 2.
Thanks.
So exciting. I want to go back. I saw it with the original cast,
oh, yeah,
but I want to go back and see it now.
Oh, yeah, it's very different.
I'm sure it is. But I wanted to ask, like, how long you guys, what it's like taking over a role, especially in a Broadway run? Like, how much rehearsal did you guys get, and how long has this process been?
Well,
was it quick?
It was quick. I felt like it was quick. We got about almost 3 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks of rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And
with Sam or with like the assistant director?
It was with the assistant director. Okay. Sam was there for a couple days, but Osh is our assistant director. He's amazing. And he's been directing under Sam for years. He was with The Flick and John and...
Amazing.
All the ones, you know, Sam's many plays. So he was with us most of the time. And Sam was doing Hamlet as well, so...
Right.
And we rehearsed because one of the characters is still the same actor, actress. Jane stayed with the cast, so... She was still performing at night, so we worked with the understudy, who was great. And but it is interesting because then we had a whole another dynamic when we actually got into the dress rehearsal and we added Jane. And I don't have any scenes with Jane, but I know that Julie and Jane, it was like, oh, this is, you know, we have 2 days to figure out our dynamic.
Right. Who are you?
But they, I mean, apparently they worked together like 25 years ago.
That must be
doing
fun.
A regional theater show. Isn't that neat? And there's a photo of them together, and they haven't worked together since then. So it's neat. And I mean, it's definitely hard because in this particular play, there's in this particular character, like there's definitely different ways you can approach it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be completely different.
And
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that what's neat about Sam and Osh is that, and I felt like from my very first audition, I knew that Sam was open to that, to like maybe a different interpretation.
Did the casting director communicate that to you?
No, which was kind of scary because I actually got the audition and then went to see the show.
Right.
And then thought, oh, okay, that's not what I was thinking, but I'm trying to, I want to add to, you know, I want to take some of what she did and make it my own. And
yeah, that's
and
tricky.
I wasn't sure if that was gonna fly or not, and I got lucky, and he also worked with me in the room, which was really nice. And then we started with the same blueprint and the same blocking, and then things that didn't feel right for us, we would ask if we could change it, and they were very like, you know, flexible with that. And then gradually it kind of became our own.
Yeah.
But it's different. It's a weird thing to come in halfway through, or not even halfway, like at the end of a big run and be like, and now we're going to try it and see if that works. But
I love that, though, because it's also, speaks highly of the play itself, which is hard when plays are on Broadway and it's not a musical.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just about the star casting or whatever it is, but... The fact that they really trust the script and that actors can inhabit it, and it's not really about, even though the performances were incredible, it doesn't
so
have to
good.
Be those actors for it to carry itself.
That's so true. I mean, really, is the writing is so good.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And they keep saying, you know, when we get nervous, it's like, just trust the writing, just trust the words that are coming out of your mouth because they're good and the story works. So, as long as you say the right lines, then you got a good, you know, good head start.
Yeah. I mean, you were mentioning before we started recording about how it's a little intimidating that it's like one big scene that you have and you don't come on and off.
Yeah.
And so there, you know, there's monologues and things like that. How have you been preparing to go on stage? Like, is it different from what you normally would do?
Yeah, because I realized pretty quickly that I can't be backstage from the top of the show. Like, I can't be down there because I get too nervous. And I feel like I would be waiting down there for almost 50 minutes before I set foot on stage, and that's just too long.
Yeah.
So I sort of stay up in my dressing room and get ready. And I listen. I actually do have the monitor on. But I kind of think of it as like I'm in a big house. I'm in the doll's house, and I'm on my bedroom level floor. And then I come down the stairs to talk to my mom, and I find out she's in the foyer, you know. And
yeah, I love that.
So I come down later, and then I'm only backstage for a couple minutes before I come on, which has been that's worked for me. But it is strange because Julie's been out there for 50 minutes before I come out.
So. And the audience has been present with her for the whole time.
Totally. And then they're like, who the heck is this? You know, like,
yeah, and you have to kind of join the momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have a good idea of what this audience is before you even set foot on the stage.
Yeah.
Stephen McKinley Henderson is so sweet. And, you know, I like to talk to him after he gets off, after his first scene.
And get the report.
And, yeah, he'll be like, they're listening. Or like, they love me. Or like, they really are Team Nora tonight. Like, you know, it's neat to get a like insight before you even.
The weather report.
Yeah, the weather report that. For that evening. Yeah.
Oh, he's so incredible.
I know. I love him. You know, he directed a show as part of the Negro Ensemble Company when I was working in the box office.
At Signature.
And I remember, yeah, at the old Signature. And I remember arranging all his tickets. Like, and we all loved him because he was so kind when he would walk in to all the box office employees. And so I told him that, like, our first day of rehearsal. I was like, I arranged your tickets for the show. He's just such a nice guy. It's like...
I mean, I remember seeing him in, like, the August Wilson shows there.
Yeah.
He's so crazy. Yes. Incredible.
Gosh, yeah. He's just... He's pretty special. He has some good stories.
So do they have a set end date? Or is it open-ended?
Currently, January 20... January 8th, I think, is the set end. So, we last until then.
Are you, like, putting your paycheck in the bank?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's great. It's, like, nice to have a little bit of some income.
Yeah.
And trying to get those health insurance weeks. And,
of course.
You know, save them. It's, like, so that when I go to the dark place the next time, hopefully I'll have, like, something to fall back on.
That's, yeah. It's just something that I always struggle with, and I know that you should try to embrace in this industry, is just the fact that you can't plan ahead.
Yeah, that's really hard.
And I never thought that I was someone who needed to have control over things. My husband's going to laugh when he hears that. but that, you know, the lack of control is really hard for me to deal with.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, me too. I mean, my parents always said, like, we're really surprised that you chose this because it doesn't really fit your personality. And it doesn't. And I take it out on them, you know.
Oh, no.
They have to hear all my anxiety and my, you know, upsetting conversations when I don't feel good about an audition or whatever.
Right.
And I feel bad that they have to go through all of that, too. It's like... It takes its toll on your whole family.
Yeah.
Really. The dark times.
I was going to ask how they take in your choice to be an artist.
So supportive.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom...
I know they were just in town, right?
They were, yes. They came in and saw the show 3 times.
That's adorable.
They're so sweet. But, you know, neither of them were ever into acting. I mean, they liked going to the theater, but... So they're learning with me about this business, but they definitely are supportive and happy. Like, they might even be happier than me when I actually get a job.
Are you an only child?
No, I have a younger sister.
Okay.
She's lives in Memphis, and she was a second grade teacher, but now she's a nanny. She's nannying.
Oh. You both have the magic children.
Yeah, we like kids.
The children it's magic. Weird.
Yeah. And my dad's a teacher. My mom was a education major, but...
Okay, so you've been around it.
Yeah.
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 And you grew up in Louisville, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to Actors Theater a lot growing up?
I did. I remember going with my mom to see, like, Forever Plaid and Dracula.
That helps that you have... That even, yeah, if your parents liked to see the theater, that you had an amazing regional theater in your hometown.
I did. Oh, and I also, right across the river in New Albany, Indiana, is Derby Dinner Playhouse, and I, like, did a couple internships there in their office, and I did a children's show there, and so they do big musicals and stuff there. Like, I remember growing up there, I saw Annie Get Your Gun or whatever, and, oh, gosh.
All those classics.
All those classics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also had, like, we have Stage One for kids, we have... I feel like it is a Kentucky Center for the Arts, so all the touring shows come through there, so I would get to see Les Mis and Phantom when they come through.
Have you had any artistic mentors in your time in New York?
Yes. You know, one of my favorite, you know him fairly well, David Caudill.
Yeah.
From the New Harmony Project.
He's an amazing playwright. Yes. I'll put it in the intro. He was on The Compass. I don't remember what episode.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that.
You
I didn't read it. I
you
didn't
have
hear
to
it.
Listen to it. It was like probably a year ago.
Oh, David. Yeah. I'm going to have to go listen to his.
He's the sweetest.
He really is. And, like, now I've known him since I was, 21, 22. So it's been a long time.
Did you read in his play in New Harmony, or were you working on another one? I don't remember.
It was in his.
It was his.
Uh-huh. That was my first time in New Harmony. I remember the day I met him. And, like, he's just been such a support and a friend since the beginning in the art field, but also, like, personal things I call him about, you know. He's, like, he's become, like, a big brother.
Yeah.
So, and his stuff is so good. Like, someone who's that talented, I feel like you can just trust them. Like, I trust his opinions on anything I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my main mentor in the city, I would think.
Yeah. Do you have any other artistic outlets that you reach for in between jobs? Are you a writer or anything like that?
I'm not. You know, I wish I was a writer, but because of the New Harmony Project, I love readings. So I think I've done up to like 40-something readings in a year.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I counted once because I was just... curious.
How do you get involved with them as an actor? I'm sure it's like tiny strings that tie together, and you meet someone there. But
yeah, I think maybe it was I gave my name to the Lark, and like the Lark, I did several readings for them, and then a director that saw me there brought me to another place, and I've done readings for like lots of different companies. Some pay, some don't. Some are like a week long. Workshop, some are one day, mm-hmm. some are cold, but like that has kept me, that's another thing that keeps me out of the dark place, because it's like I have something to work on,
yeah,
and focus on when I'm not in don't have a job really. And then you feel like you have a purpose too, because these plays are still being workshopped and developed, and like you're contributing to that process. So since I'm not a writer and I haven't found another creative outlet, I think that that's served me really well.
No, and I'm sure it serves the plays to have someone
I hope so.
In the cast who has like perfected the art of being an actor in readings, you know.
Yeah, and it's hard.
You know, giving feedback. I think that's something that New Harmony actually taught a lot of us from Evansville really well, really young.
Yes.
Like how to give feedback in a constructive way.
Oh yeah.
How to prize the playwright mm-hmm. above everything else, just because that's the beginning
the most
of
important
the theater. Yeah.
Or she. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that like I just remember being in that conference room at New Harmony and thinking, oh, he's changing that right now. Like he's actually changing his line based on what we just said.
Yeah.
And that's so neat because you don't ever really think about that when you're doing plays in college, because you're doing published works that are
right.
completed, and it's just it's a whole different world that opens up, and something that you're contributing to.
Yeah, totally.
I'm trying to think of something else that something came to mind. It can be hard too, because some people do like four workshops of a play, and then it finally gets produced or it gets picked up and you don't get the part.
Yeah.
So it's hard, you have to keep like which I don't do very well, like a balance of how attached to get to a piece. Because that's happened, but then the opposite's happened too, where you do get to do the piece once it actually goes to a stage.
I think that's difficult for everybody involved.
Yeah.
Especially if they really enjoyed working with you, but they're making that decision for whatever reason. The producers want someone else, or...
Yeah. That can be hard, or if it's a different director than the one you worked with, or, but you do feel it's hard when you feel like, oh man, I really helped contribute to
the changes. Yeah, and especially if you weren't getting paid in the workshop process, mm-hmm. it's like
yes, yeah, that
you invested your time,
mm-hmm.
but there's no promises.
Yeah, I guess that's the other part about being an actor. It's like we are. I think it's weird because everyone thinks about like acting as like. The celebrities and stuff, but
right.
like there's so many of us like just giving our energy and our creativity to things and then never getting to do them or be part of it, and like we struggle.
It's true.
It's so hard. You know,
well, and that's the thing that's always it's that weird line between you know, making this your career.
Mm-hmm.
Which we should be able to, right?
Because yeah, right.
People are getting paid for it. And it's a job. But it's also like when you add that circumstance, you add all of these other expectations and pressures on it.
Mm-hmm.
That if you, let's say we were only doing it as a hobby, we wouldn't be putting on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, guys.
It is. And it's like you have to
But decide. It is an industry. So why shouldn't we be the ones who are.
Right. Somebody's must be making money.
Doing it. Yeah.
I guess that's when you have to be able to do everything. TV, film, commercials,
yeah.
Theater, you know, voiceover. You have to have.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know how people make it. Financially.
Well, I remember we ran into each other at a play, like, after you had done The Crucible, and you were saying, like, oh, I had kind of expected after having that credit to have the auditions becoming a little more, to have, you know, the, even though we know it's not a ladder, like, to have something
open up
yeah. in a way, but it wasn't happening immediately.
No, not at all. I mean, it was, yeah. I had little things here and there, which and readings and workshops and but this was my next big one, which was almost a year.
Yeah.
So that's not easy. But you know, I'm grateful it was only a year. Could have been longer.
Yeah. But you really have gotten a chance to work in film too.
Yeah, I've been really lucky. Oh, it's so different from theater, and coming from such a theater background, both all of us,
mm-hmm.
that we know, it's just very strange. It's just a whole different. World.
Have you just been like learning as you go?
Yeah.
Or did you take classes? And
I took a class with Marcy Phillips
mm-hmm.
of ABC, and I took a class with Paul Chenet.
I don't know.
Am I saying his name wrong? Chenet?
I don't know him.
He casts a lot of like good indie film, like Winter's Bone and
mm-hmm.
and that stuff. And those classes were really helpful. But those are the only two I took. I think Marcy was the one that just said, she said something like, you just do exactly what you can, and then you have to let it go, because like I did an audition, and she goes, yep, and now you either get the part or you don't, like there's nothing more to do, like and like you either, so you have to get to that point where you just
easier
like,
said than done,
right? So you're saying that I can't go home and twiddle my thumbs by the phone and like
think about it into existence.
Like, yeah, exactly.
No, I mean that's so true, but it's difficult to do.
Yeah, it is definitely. But I have so many friends who are like writing their own short films or shooting their own stuff, and that
mm-hmm.
I admire that so much. And I maybe someday I can. Try to make my own work, because
yeah.
that seems so important. And
I think nowadays it really is.
Yeah,
I've never been good about that either. This with the podcast is really the first time I've
yeah you're
really made it
yeah.
something like that happen. I've always been someone who much more depends on like a group dynamic and the communal drive to get something off the ground.
Right. That's why I'm not a director.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll do my little part, but you tell me what to do.
Was Perks of Being a Wallflower your first film?
Yes. It was I had done student films.
Okay.
But I had never seen a call sheet before. I had
mm-hmm.
never, I didn't really know what I was doing. And I remember Stephen Chbosky, the director, saying to me, so what have you done before? Like on my very first day of shooting. And I was like, this Columbia grad film about blah, blah, blah. And he was like, that's it?
Well, he'd already like, cast you, so
yeah.
he saw your resume at some point.
I did, but I was so dumb, I didn't even think that I was that behind. I didn't have an IMDb profile, I didn't have anything.
Oh.
I don't know, I got lucky as heck, but he was so nice, because then at the end of the first day of shooting, he said, he had everybody stop, it was like 4 a.m., and he was like, everyone give Erin a round of applause for her first day on a feature film.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It was really sweet, considering Emma Watson standing right there, having done Harry Potter's for, you
Since
know,
she was
15 years.
Yeah, 10 or whatever.
Yeah. I was like, thanks, first day.
I mean, it looked like that film is so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and it was great part because I didn't have a lot of lines, and mm-hmm. so I just was there a lot watching and observing and learning. And
it's like a group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
in that like high school time when they're all so bonded. So
yeah,
I assume that that was kind of the experience of doing the scenes.
It was totally. And we really all stayed in the same hotel the whole time in Pittsburgh, and we would hang out after. So we were able to create like a friendship of the five of us or six. At one point there were like seven of us staying in that hotel. And then kind of carry that over to set, which was fun.
Yeah.
It was neat.
How has your approach to auditions changed over the last however many years? Is there anything that you can like observe about how you approach it?
I think that I have learned that if I get too nervous, I can't perform well. So maybe that one thing I've learned is keeping myself from like getting too worked up beforehand. Or like I really appreciated Amelia's podcast.
Amelia McLean.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because she said, you know, sometimes you don't always have to be memorized to have a great audition. And I agree with her on that. And I think I have struggled to let myself look at the page.
Yeah.
And I think that my best auditions are when I do allow myself to look down, because I'm able to fully be in the character and not be like searching in my head for the lines. And sometimes you don't have to look down, but if you've given permission to yourself to do that, then you don't feel that pressure. So I totally agree with her on that. And I think that I used to just think if I look down, then my audition's over, you know,
right.
That's the worst thing to happen.
Yeah. No, I definitely put a lot of pressure on that too, because again, the control thing, like if I can really know all the lines, that's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously making choices and acting.
But
I know the lines, that's going to,
they're going to realize I put so much work into this and
I'm going to feel more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't always, like, and you know, it may have been Marcy that said, we like it if you're holding the sides. Casting directors will get anxious for you if you put them down, because they're like, oh, is she going to go up? Like, is she going to need that?
Right.
And so I remember her saying that. So I never put them down. I always have them, but sometimes I'm not on the right page or whatever. But that sort of accepting that you can't always, sometimes you have 24 hours, you know, and that's just life, and you can look at the page, Erin. Like, you know.
And then what was the, I haven't seen the most recent film that you did. What was that experience?
Oh, Sweet,
like?
Sweet Lonely Girl.
Yeah, tell me about that.
It was so cool because it was my first lead in a feature.
How exciting.
It was
I'm
really
saying that
neat.
Through this whole podcast. That's my phrase for Erin's podcast. How exciting. I'm just realizing it. Sorry, guys.
How exciting. Well, it was. I was like, okay. I mean, that was, it was, it's considered a like gothic horror.
Okay.
There's no blood. I can't handle blood, so I'm very glad that there was no blood. But it's like that sort of 70s horror film kind of feel. He drew a lot of inspiration from films like My Summer of Love, Heavenly Creatures, Persona, like a lot of female doubling tales. And then he wrote this sort of script that had two women in it and this mysterious house. And it was a great experience, because for the whole month, I'm in pretty much every scene. So I'm learning so much and getting to be constantly in front of the camera and it was actually very little dialogue, which was neat, because it was all about making sure that you weren't. I learned a lot about the difference of what a camera can pick up and what, you know, from theater, when we feel like we have to show a little bit or sometimes, but the camera picks up everything, and it was so fascinating.
Huh.
He'd be like, you know, if that's a 5, take it down to a 2. I'd be like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So I don't even have to show that much. Like, it's
neat.
Yeah,
that's such a gift to be able to just practice that much.
Yeah, I got to practice.
And experiment.
And the director, Alex Calvo, he is amazing. A.D. Calvo, he goes by.
Okay.
He wrote it, he directed it, and then he just submitted it, and we got into these pretty great festivals. Like,
Nice. Like, I'm going to write down his name so I can look it
up. Yes, look him up. He would be a good podcaster.
Is he in New York?
He's in Connecticut. He's in Connecticut. And he all comes right, here all Alex. The time. Alex. And he's got a great voice. Like, I would listen to him.
All right. Well, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. It's on Shudder. It's a Shudder exclusive. It's a streaming service for horror movies through AMC.
All right, Shudder.
Yeah, Shudder.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
There it is again. There it is.
So exciting.
You can tell that I'm tired, can't
you?
Oh,
bless your heart.
How are you feeling about New York these days?
You know, I do love it here. I feel like I love Astoria, and I love where we all relive. And I do think that, especially in this climate, this political climate, it's nice to be in this city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really grateful I live here and not anywhere else right now. But I think it would be neat someday to try LA.
Yeah.
And just see what that side of the country's like.
Have you ever spent any time there?
I have spent like 72 hours total on two different trips combined. So no, not really. Yeah. But I have a friend who I just met with today who's giving it a shot. They're moving out in 2 weeks and she's only lived here. And, you know, I feel like it's so brave and it's worth a try just to see what that world's like so you always know. But on the other hand, I'm like, I just can't imagine never, like, I can't imagine never coming back here.
Yeah.
This is sort of home, and the theaters here, you know, I just don't even know how to you would leave theater, doing theater. Of course, there's theater in LA, but
right,
I just don't
it's
know.
Not the same.
It's not the same.
No, I mean, I just got back from this wedding in LA, and it was like everyone we talked to was trying to convince us
to move out there.
Which, you know, I don't know. We've talked about maybe going in the next 5 years or so.
Yeah. Just to try.
Just to try. And also just to have more space.
You know, and having a yard of some sort.
Having some outdoor
would
life.
Would be nice.
In a different way.
For Gus Gus.
For Gus Gus,
for my dog.
How has that changed your life, getting a dog
in
the
God.
City?
Oh, my God. You know, I never thought I'd do it.
Uh-huh.
And I had been, you know, going through a breakup, thinking, okay, what am I going to do to lift myself out of this?
Right.
And it has really, it's been the best investment in my own sanity. He's amazing. He, you know, I swear there, all those studies are true that it really helps your brain. And I feel like every time I look at him, I get like a little release of endorphins or whatever, serotonin. And so.
Did you grow up with dogs?
I did. Yeah. I did. So it had been a long time of not having one. But, you know, he's been great. And, you know, it's hard in New York, but he's pee-pad trained. so he goes on that if he needs to.
And you have people who can check in on him if you can't get home.
Luckily, I do, yeah.
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 That's great. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I just think it's neat. Just a shout out to our Evansville group of the kind of support we have here.
Yeah.
I'm just so grateful for that. You know, someone asked me when I was there, people stay after with their playbills, and someone said, what's your advice to a girl? She was about to do her college auditions, and I said, audition for Evansville. Because I think, like, that support group here has been... I don't know what
incredible.
I'd do without of it. Yeah, without it. Like...
I don't know. I mean, even coming here and having a new community at a new school, which mm-hmm. really did help me transition, like having somewhere to go every day.
Yeah.
But like coming here with a community already built,
mm-hmm.
huge.
And even like so many people that like, I mean, I only went to school with you for a year and I feel so grateful that I get to hang out with you and see you at readings.
Know each other.
And yeah. And even people like Nick Mills, who I never even went to school with, and yet I'm like excited about his Broadway show and his work in Amelia and Matt
and
Smart.
All, we all really care about what everyone else is doing.
It's a pretty great community.
Yeah.
For life. I feel like we're like a fraternity sorority or something. Evansville is. UET.
UET.
Yeah. So just thought I'd I'm sure you've done shout-outs to them before.
No, that's a great shout-out.
Had to give another one to Lutz.
So are there any concrete things that you reach for again and again, like if you are in an uninspired, dark place besides yoga? Like a book you read or a place you go or music you listen to or something?
Ooh, I'm very lucky to say that my parents have been my rock. And I feel like I call them and I go home. I go to Louisville. And I went there, I think, 4 times last year. And that was the most I'd been visited home in a while. But there's something about, like, going back home and sort of recharging that has helped me a lot. But when I can't, I would say my friends and reaching out no matter what.
Because do you live alone?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, but when you're in that dark place, it's easy to isolate.
It's been about 2.5 years now that I've lived alone, and I Skype with friends that don't live here a lot, like Skype with people in LA, and that has, I don't know how people did it before cell phones and Skype.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it just makes you feel so much more involved, and I don't feel like I'm alone.
Yeah. I mostly use it to Skype with my nieces, and I'm like, what if I didn't have this?
Exactly. Like, that's incredible. That's huge. And I've been dating a guy who, his niece is in Japan, and his brother lives in Japan, and they Skype all the time.
Incredible.
I mean, it's really changed everything, so I just reach out a lot. I bug people. That's my answer.
That's a great answer.
I'm like, I'm down. Talk to me.
That's a great answer.
Oh, thanks.
And then I know you've been busy with the show, but have you seen anything recently that you want to recommend?
Oh, gosh,
Any medium, not just theater.
I saw Parallelogram at Second Stage.
Oh.
I really liked it.
I don't know anything about that.
Bruce Norris wrote it.
Okay.
And Celia Keenan Bolger is in it.
She's love her.
So good. It's so trippy. It's such a cool piece. I don't want to give anything away, but it's like, it's about, like, you know, parallel. It's kind of like, instead of a telegram, it's about like a parallel universe's gram. So what if we could, you know, go to the parallel universe and change something, kind of a play. It's really, like, I've never seen anything like it on stage. I mean, it's good. And that's running right now, and Michael Greif directed it, and
great.
I think it just opened, actually.
Okay, see it.
Yeah, go check it out. Oh, you'd be good in that part too.
I want to see it. Anything else?
What else have I seen?
It's okay.
I don't know. What else have I seen lately? I'm about to go see Napoli, Brooklyn.
Ooh, I want to see that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I think it closes at the end of the month. But
I've been terrible about seeing these. We're seeing Natasha Pierre again.
I've not
night.
Seen it.
September 3rd.
This is embarrassing.
Now,
yeah,
I
have to go.
Now. When do you guys not have shows?
Sunday evening? Do they have Sunday evening?
I think they just have an afternoon. You'll have to watch the video at the library at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really... We saw... I mean, our Frankie's best friend, Nick, is in it, so we saw it twice at Ars Nova, and then we got to go to opening night with him.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then we're going to see it again. And it's just, it's such an incredible show. I'm very, this is a larger discussion, and I'll have to have someone on from Comet to talk about it, but I'm very sad that it's closing.
I am too.
It's an incredible work
I'm
of art.
So disappointed.
Incredible.
Yeah. It just seems like it's not
a huge undertaking.
The right time to go away.
Yeah.
Or to be.
Anywho.
I want to see Bandstand before it closes too.
Mm. I bet that's fun.
Yeah, I hear it through my dressing room window all the time. I'm like, that sounds so good. I also listen to Phantom from the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. You know, Frankie's sister is one of the ballerinas in that.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
She's one of the ballerinas.
I want to meet her.
I'm sure you will at some point.
I'm so like...
Next time she's in Astoria, I'll call you and come over.
Because we share a stage alley.
Yeah.
And so I'm always like, are you in Phantom?
I'll have to show you her picture. And she, I mean...
Yes, please.
She's like, got Frankie's eyes, so I'm sure you could pick her
up.
Oh,
my God. That's so cool. I'd love to meet her.
Erin, thank you.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you doing this.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller. Music by Brendan Spieth. audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.